There's a book used in law schools that contains no footnotes. No, not one. It's a co-authored book, and it's very slim, and it's called The Godless Constitution. The idea is that the founding fathers intentionally left God out of our founding document, our governing document. That would be the U.S. Constitution. Is that really true? One man who would totally dispute that idea is Stephen McDowell. He is the president of the Providence Foundation, not to be confused with Providence Forum, for which I am privileged to serve as the executive director, which was ultimately founded by Dr. Peter Lobeck. Stephen McDowell is a terrific speaker and author on the whole subject of the Christian roots of America, including the U.S. Constitution. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. Stephen McDowell joins us once again. Stephen, great to have you back on the program. Thank you.
Well, it's great to be with you, Jerry, as always.
Sure. So, I don't know if you've ever actually seen that book per se, but I know you've heard the kind of arguments being made in it. The founders specifically, explicitly left God out of the whole constitutional process, and they certainly intended that there would be this strict separation of church and state, by which really people tend to mean the separation of God and government. What say you?
Well, everything about the U.S. Constitution reveals God's hand. The nature of the convention, you know, you get James Madison and Benjamin Franklin and George Washington and Benjamin Rush, to name a few, all said you can see the finger of the Almighty One, the finger of God in the events that led up to the fact we had a Constitution. Then, through the miraculous nature of working through problems, where Benjamin Franklin called for a time of prayer. And so they all recognized God's hand was in this, in the event. But not only does the events, historical events, reveal the nature of God, but the document itself, all aspects of it, the power and form of our document, that is the external framework, the ideas that are embodied in how our Constitution is set up, that's the framework, but the power, the internal principle. So when you look at that document, you see that the framework, the decentralization of government, constitutionalism, separation of powers, impartial judiciary, civilian control of police and military, separation of jurisdictions, election of representatives, all of those are biblical in their idea. But more importantly, the underlying principles, the concepts of Christian self-governments, of people covenanting together to form a civil society, uniqueness of the individual, property rights, the importance of biblical education, morality, all of those reflect the biblical nature of God as well. So you see the power and form, you see the historical setting of that document. And then we could look at, you know, specific things in the document itself. Our Constitution requires an oath of office, and as many people in the past have pointed out, that this, the context of that oath is only a Christian understanding of an oath, that you have to believe in God that will hold you accountable for your words. We require that oath of office. It recognizes the Christian Sabbath, not the Jewish Sabbath, not the Mohammedan Sabbath, but officially recognizes the Christian Sabbath.
Which is Sunday.
The Lord,
mm-hmm. Sunday.
Which is a Sunday, dated in the year of our Lord, and in the relation to the Declaration of Independence, which is our founding covenant. So there's specific recognition of that. And I can go on and on with the premise, the purpose, the power, the unalienable rights, and so many other things in that Constitution all proclaim this is a Christian biblical document, and our founders understood that to be the case.
George Washington actually used the word miracle, that he was the one who presided over the Constitutional Convention, which wasn't always pleasant. I mean, it was slow going at first, a lot of arguments and so forth. And as you mentioned, Ben Franklin called for prayer, that did help to alleviate some of the tension, and they were able to succeed in finishing the whole thing. And again, Washington uses the word miracle. That itself, you know, is, you know, greater than a word like coincidence. It's, in other words, it's got religious connotations.
Yeah, and Benjamin Rush, a signer of the Declaration, father of medicine in America, third most famous founding father at that time, listen to what he said. He said that the union of the 12 states in the form and of 10 states in the adoption of the Constitution in less than 10 months, under the influence of local prejudices, opposite interests, popular arts, and even the threats of bold and desperate men, is a solitary event in the history of mankind. And then this is in a letter in 1788, so it's even before it went into effect. And then listen to this statement. He said, "I do not believe that the Constitution was the offspring of inspiration, but I am as perfectly satisfied that the union of the states in its form and adoption is as much the work of a divine providence as any of the miracles recorded in the Old and New Testament were the effects of a divine power." So he's another one who recognized, hey, the God who did all these miracles we read about in the Bible, in the Old and New Testament, he was at work performing a miracle in giving us that document as well. So the words of these men who gave us our nation clearly reflect their worldview, their heart, their thinking, and gave us the, I call our form of government, American Christian Constitutional Federal Republic. And all of those words, those adjectives, you know, have a specific meaning that help clarify the uniqueness of the type of government that our founders gave us and that we operate under. And as John Adams said, such a form of government is only possible for a moral and religious people. And of course, he meant Christian when he used the word religious, because only a moral and religious people can provide the power, the internal principles to support our that unique form of government that we have.
You used the word federal a moment ago. We all know, of course, we have the federal government in the U.S. It's my understanding that the word federal gets back to the Latin word for covenant. What?
Yeah.
That's fascinating. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, you're exactly right. That does mean covenant. What's unique about America is you had 13 sovereign independent states who covenanted together under God to form this new national government. So federal here means there's a balance and power between the new national government and each of those 13 at that time sovereign state governments. They covenanted together, and that's why we have a constitution, because the constitution specifically delineates here is the power that we the people through our representatives in the states are giving to the national government. Article 1 gives the power of the legislature. There are 18 enumerated powers. That's all the powers our Constitution gives to our national government. All the rest rest with the people in the states. Amendments 9 and 10 make that clear. So this federal form was unique in history because you have two different governments operating upon people at the same time, a national government, but its power is delineated in the Constitution, and the state governments, where most of the power rests, state and local governments, and both of those operate upon citizens at the same time because the Constitution delineates the limited power of the national government. Now, of course, over the past few centuries, we've turned that upside down, where for a long time, we recognized there's only certain limited power the national government has, but for a lot of different reasons. Now, the national government thinks we have all the power, and we'll let you states or common peons have a little bit of power because we're nice. But so federal is that understanding. It's a covenant the states made together. And of course, they made it through their duly elected representatives who they sent there and then those that approved the Constitution. And that was unique. That was not really a unique aspect of our form of government that you didn't really see in history, except with the Hebrew Republic back in the Old Covenant that uniquely was, they had a lot of similar ideas incorporated in their government that we have in the U.S. government.
In that Benjamin Rush quote you had a moment ago, he says 12 states. When you were talking about the federal government being a covenant, you mentioned 13 states, and of course it was 13 states. Rhode Island didn't bother to send delegates to the Constitutional Convention,
yeah.
But somehow they must have gotten roped in, you know, so that they were obviously a part of the country at its beginning. The Constitution went into effect officially April 30, 1789. That was the first, in effect, the first official day of the United States. But when did Rhode Island sign on and say, okay, Uncle, we're part of this too?
Well, it was, I think it was 1791. After the fact, they recognized, we better jump in while we can because we might not make it on our own. So, that's what the 12-state reference. The 10-state is that under the Constitution, once 2/3 of them approved it, it officially went into effect. So when 10 states had adopted it, it then would go into effect. And of course, officially, the first Congress met in April 1789.
Okay, now let's look at this. One of the aspects of the Constitution that makes it so durable is the fact that it is realistic in its assessment of the sinfulness of man, which is very clearly taught in the Bible. You know, for all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. You have a lot of division of power in the Constitution. Some people today are really upset about the Electoral College and they want to abolish it, but they don't realize it's a safeguard for our freedom because man is basically sinful. So how about a comment about that and, you know, therefore the Christian input into the U.S. Constitution?
Yeah, our founders understood that. They understood that the premise of our form of government is based upon the biblical idea that man is fallen and sinful, and because of that, you cannot entrust any man or few men with too much power. And that's why in our Constitution, the three functions of all governments, the legislative, executive, and judicial function, every government makes law, executes law, and judges, but with monarchs, one person does it, with aristocracies, a handful of people. But our founders recognized, let's divide that among a whole lot of people, and then let's set up a series of checks and balances so they can hold one another accountable. And John Adams made clear this founder's understanding of the sinful nature of man when he said, to expect self-denial from men when they have a majority in their favor and consequently power to gratify themselves is to disbelieve all history and universal experience. It is to disbelieve revelation in the Word of God, which informs us the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Of course, there he's quoting directly from the book of Jeremiah, chapter 17, verse 9. He didn't give the reference because he knew every American would understand, hey, this is the Bible speaking here. And then he ends up this statement, there's no man so blind as not to see that to talk of founding a government upon a supposition that nations and great bodies of men left to themselves will practice a course of self-denial is either to babble like a newborn infant or to deceive like an unprincipled imposter. So they clearly understood that man is sinful. And if you leave man to himself, he will not limit his own authority. Never has happened in history. He's going to abuse it in one way or another. So that's why they set up the type of government that we have. Very limited a power given to the national government, series of checks and balances, divide into three branches. And that's, I hope everyone has read and studied the Constitution. Article 1 deals with the power of the legislature. Article 2, the power of the executive. Article 3, the power of the judiciary. And these are listed in each one.
We have 10 seconds left.
Each one of those articles is less and less in length. And so the premise of government is that man is sinful and he needs to be checked in his power. And our Constitution does that.
Stephen McDowell, thank you so much. All the best. ProvidenceFoundation.com.